Hi, I'm Jen. I love watching horror movies. I also have PTSD and I go to a lot of therapy.
I'm Lara. I have anxiety and depression and love having the shit scared out of me. Wait, what?
I'm Mike. I'm a therapist and I love talking about horror movies and mental health.
We love horror films for how much they scare us and for how much they help us.
Because we love talking about mental health, aka how crazy we are, and the role the horror genre can play in our self-care, we started a podcast called Psychoanalysis.
Every episode, we talk about a movie and how it relates to a different topic in mental health and wellness. Whether it's a deep dive or a shorter episode in a movie that makes us feel all warm and fuzzy.
But not in a weird way.
Unless we're talking about hot horror sweaters, because then it is very weird.
True.
Very weird.
Our episodes drop every Thursday on the Consequence Podcast Network. Listen to find out
how horror can heal.
Hi, I'm Anna Marie Cox. I am an adjunct loser and a co-host of a new podcast called Space the Nation. I've been covering politics for over 20 years. My co-host, Dan Dresner, is a professor of international relations at Tufts University, and we're both huge science fiction nerds. So our podcast is about the politics in science fiction, how characters and plot lines deal with power structures and alliances, economic forces and class struggles, and how these events reflect historical events and are explained by real political theory. We also do some serious fan personing. If you're a Stephen King fan listening to a 2-hour Stephen King podcast, I think you'll like it. We just finished recapping The Expanse Season 5, and now we're moving on to look at things like Ender's Game, Alien, and The Left Hand of Darkness. If you're interested, you can find out more on patreon.com/spacethenation, or you can get us wherever you get your podcasts. See you there.
My friendship to all of you precludes my involvement with any one of you. But if you want to make love, then I do too, and I'll be right there behind you.
Constant listeners, and welcome yet again to the Losers Club, a Stephen King podcast. You've heard us despair over desperation. You've heard us get gunned down by the regulators, and now you get to hear us go bonkers for Bachman. Today, we are concerned with King, with what King's 1996 experiment in twinning narratives actually has to say, if anything. Before we get started, however, let's meet our panel. My name is Rockin' Randall Colburn, and joining me from Nashville, we have...
This is Gen 2, The Rage Adams, although I almost said bonkers for Bachman because I love that alliteration.
I love a good use of alliteration.
Me too. Yeah, so well done.
What was your first encounter with Richard Bachman?
The Long Walk, I think. I had my dad had the copy, like the bound of all four of the books, mm-hmm. and I was like, ooh, this is fascinating. And I think I read The Long Walk, and I'm sure I saw the Arnold Schwarzenegger Running Man, and mm-hmm. was like, ooh, this is interesting. I don't really have clear memories of reading Richard Bachman until I was like in high school, and it was kind of like an intellectual kind of exercise as reading it, more so than like really enjoying it. And that kind of sums up my feelings on Richard Bachman in general. Like, yeah. I love to talk about him in connection with King more than I like to read him.
Sure. But. No, I agree with that. Who is joining me from Chicago?
Man, Jen took my nickname, so I'll just say this is this is Dan Twinning Flieger. I wanted to say Rage, but I just read that for the first time last year. Good to be here, folks.
What was your first encounter with Bachman ever?
I was The Running Man back in the day.
The movie or the book?
The movie first, but I didn't make the connection when I was little. I just loved Arnold when I was a kid. I think I've read every Bachman now except for Blaze, which I think is the newest one.
Yeah, Blaze like 2007. is my blind spot as well with Bachman. Then who is joining us from Austin?
On a Long Walk.
Oh, nice.
That is good.
I know, that's a keeper.
That's it. I finally found
my. And Anna, what was your first ever experience with Richard Bachman?
I mean, I can't, it's probably sometime in, I've been thinking about my first experience with King ever since I started talking to y'all on this podcast. And I think that was Christine when I was in middle school. Actually, at I believe Hill Country Middle School, not too far away from here. I believe that Thinner was the first Bachman book I read. And I hadn't really thought about it till just now. I liked the Bachman books as a teenager.
Yeah.
I do not like them very much as an adult.
Well, that actually dovetails with one of the questions I have for us later. But yeah, because I actually really agree, Anna, is that I was very into the Bachman books as a teenager. I first bought the Bachman books, I remember, when I was on the boardwalk in New Jersey, the Jersey Shore. I was on vacation with my parents, and I was such a rabid reader when I was a kid. I had already blew through all the books that I had brought to read while sitting on the beach with my parents and everybody. And so I remember I went to the store, and the Bachman books, I think, had just come out or were relatively new, and I had no clue what they were at all. And so that was like a really fun experiment. And I blew through them. I remember thinking, Long Walk especially was my favorite, and that's the one I still love to this day. But Rage, I remember liking a lot when I was in high school, and now when we revisited that for the pod, it was like, oh no, what was I thinking? But no, I mean, that's the thing though, is I do think the sort of teenage angst and you know, is really important to the Bachman mindset, the sort of grim finality of everything, that sense of, I don't know, absolutism of being a teenager. And yeah, that's what we're going to discuss today a little bit. We're going to start by discussing Bachman in general, using his Stephen King's The Importance of Being Bachman essay that he included in with the Regulators, and oh no, with the Bachman books when it was re-released in 1996. And yeah, we're going to use that as sort of a jumping off point, and then we're going to talk more specifically about Desperation and the Regulators and this whole twinning experiment, this whole Bachman experiment, and whether or not we think it works. If you haven't listened to our episodes on Desperation and the Regulators, they're in the feed and they're both very good. So we're going to have a little fun today discussing these things. But before we begin talking in earnest, I want to just read some sections from this essay that I think are interesting. Because King clearly has thought a lot about Bachman, and it isn't just sort of a fun pen name for him. It's very much sort of, I don't know, it was sort of a mindset that I think he found himself dipping deeper and deeper into. And one thing that I thought was fun when I was revisiting this was the idea that he was really pissed off when Bachman got found out. I just thought that was super neat. I guess I never, well, A, it's funny to think about Stephen King being mad. Like, he just seems like such a nice man. But then also the idea of, like, you know, your alter ego being found out. And even though that's going to inevitably boost your book sales and those sales, just him feeling like he lost a certain part of himself. But
yeah, my best-selling alter ego got found out. Curses.
He wrote this in Lovell, Maine, April 16th, 1996. And he says, "My first introduction wasn't very good. To me, it reads like a textbook case of author obfuscation. But that is not surprising. When it was written, Bachman's alter ego, me, in other words, wasn't in what I'd call a contemplative or analytical mood. I was, in fact, feeling robbed. Bachman was never created as a short-term alias. He was supposed to be there for the long haul. And when my name came out in connection with his, I was surprised, upset, and pissed off. When his cover was blown, Richard Bachman died. I made light of this in a few interviews where I felt required to, that I felt required to give on the subject, saying that he died of cancer of the pseudonym, but it was actually shock that killed him, the realization that sometimes people just won't let you alone. To put it more fulsome, but not at all in accurate terms, Bachman was the vampire side of my existence, killed by the sunlight of disclosure." The books in this omnibus were written by a young man who was angry, energetic, and deeply infatuated with the art and craft of writing. They weren't written as Bachman books per se. Bachman hadn't been invented yet, after all, but in a Bachman state of mind. Low rage, sexual frustration, crazy good humor, and simmering despair. So that's sort of how he leads this essay. And I do think it's interesting that he's talking about the idea of that these were written when he was young. Obviously, Thinner and Regulators and Blaze, I think, are the exceptions. Those were ones he wrote specifically for the name Bachman, but Rage, The Long Walk, Roadwork, and The Running Man were all written, you know, when he was a young writer. And so I don't know, what do we sort of take from, we've already hinted at this, but what do we take from the Bachman voice being born from a teenage king? Like, do you think that he, like, was he writing, like this, like that's the thing is, this was King, you know? It wasn't Bachman, so.
I mean, I think when I was thinking about, you know, something we touched on right away, which is having enjoyed these novels as adolescents, there is something kind of adolescent about the writing.
Mm-hmm.
It rejects editing, you know? It's sort of a leave me alone style of writing. It's very emo. It's not even emo because it's not sensitive. It's actually the personality of a teenager who doesn't want to feel shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who's above that. Kind of cruel.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah.
I mean, literally what he does to his characters in these books is pretty cruel.
Mm-hmm.
And while Stephen King characters undergo hardships, I feel like there's you identify with the character undergoing the hardship in King novels. Whereas I think in Bachman novels, it's almost that you more identify with the omniscient narrator, the writer.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're the person or the power making this character undergo such hardship and such torture. And I feel like, oh, I remember this is what I was going to say about this is sort of a regulators versus desperation thing, and we touched on it, which is Stephen King loves his characters, all of his characters. Like, I'm rereading Dr. Sleep right now, and I keep coming, it's not a great novel by any means, but The True Knot, he makes them real characters.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you, there are things to like about them. They love each other. They are true. They're true to each other. They're loyal. They have moments of kindness within their group. I mean, they're terrible, you know, steam sucking vampires, but you know, he gives them some depth that they're not just like bad people. And, mm-hmm. I feel like Bachman books, he doesn't necessarily like his characters.
Mm-mm.
Like, there's sort of like a weird, a distance and cruelty.
I think that too. And I think I've kind of, preparing for this episode, really kind of looked at that about, because I also reread The Long Walk. And I think you're right on a, like, I think King in a lot of ways says everyone is the main character of their own story. And he keeps mm-hmm. that firmly in his head when he's writing. And I think that's what allows him to develop these really rich characters. And I think the main character in any Bachman book is Stephen King. Like, I think he is writing from his perspective. And I think it's like I don't necessarily think it's that he doesn't like his characters. I think he is just giving himself an out to not care about how they feel, you know?
Mm.
Like, I think he will just kind of let things happen to them and not really try to really get into their heads too much. Whereas I think Stephen King really does that. And like, a lot of terrible shit happens to his King characters, but I think that unfolds naturally through the story. Whereas I think of King kind of like the image of Talk, like our little boy Talk, like lining up his trucks in the sandbox is what kept coming up while I was like thinking mm-hmm. through all of the Bachman books, you know?
It's almost sociopathic, honestly. Like,
it kind of is.
It's like, I actually, when you were talking, Jen, what I thought is that Bachman has the personality of a school shooter. Like,
well, Rage, Charlie Ducker,
teenager, like, right. Who's someone who sees other people not really as full human beings, but mm-hmm. rather like things to be manipulated and played out across a stage.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think I'm being almost too mean here because
I get that because
Stephen King is a nice man.
I do too.
Good values.
But I clearly think that he's very empathetic, and that is really exhausting, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think like this is his chance to not have to do that, you know? Like this is, you know, I'm tired of getting in the heads of my characters.
No, I would say the Bachman books are almost like the live journal of Stephen King. Like when
for
I go
the school
back,
shooter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's someone who fits the profile. Jeez. No, but when I go back and read like my old writing, and I wasn't an angry kid necessarily, but just when you're kind of a young man, sometimes you have, Jen, you mentioned empathy, and like empathy is something that I think develops, especially in men, a little later in life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I remember having a lot of emotions and not really having the emotional maturity to even identify what they were other than like anger, frustration. You know, I mean, it's these very kind of primitive mindsets. And when I read some of his stuff from that era, you know, the pseudonym, I definitely identify with that. And it's a lot of it that feels sort of unfinished. Like these were ideas that he had that he put out there that just didn't, they're not complete.
Yeah.
I mean, I love like The Long Walk. I think that's the one that stands out of all of those as the one that
really
I like.
His empathy. That's that's actually,
you
feel for those
most,
characters.
Yeah, it feels the most like modern Stephen King compared to the rest. But I think Anna was saying earlier, like, you know, Stephen King always seems like he lacks an editor, but especially these, they just, and I think that's, you know, wisely why he chose to put him out under the pseudonym as well. Not just so that he wasn't competing with himself in terms of sales, but I don't know that he'd want to put the SK signature on all of these stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What you were saying, Anna, about him like being a school shooter, it also reminded me, though, we mentioned this on a previous episode, I believe, but the documentary Glitch in the Matrix, like it's that sort of I live in a simulation and everybody else is NPCs kind of thinking, which is, it's that, and it speaks to that self-absorption that I think is really key to a lot of the way teenagers feel. I mean, one of the things I think people love about YA, like YA literature, is that the emotions are so big, you know, and you can remember what it was like when everything felt so important all the time, you know, and but at the same time, that kind of thinking and the idea that the world revolves around you and all of these things are so catastrophic and apocalyptic when it's usually just like a girl breaking your heart or, you know, friends didn't invite you to go to the movies, you know, but you're so mad at them. And that sort of elevates to this really grand thinking that where you're at the center of the narrative and everyone else exists to sort of, I don't know, to hurt you or love you. And
yeah.
And so it's like, so I think about that a lot with the Bachman books. And I think a lot about the kind of, because like, you know, because I feel sometimes that Bachman does hate his characters, like not all of them. Like, I agree with you, Jen, because there definitely are exceptions. But the Regulator specifically, man, he hates some of those people. And mostly, I mean, you know, not like mostly the women. Like, he treats the women like absolute garbage in those books. And it's like, and like just the way he speaks about them, it's like he's so annoyed with them, you know. And the thing is, like, King is very hyper aware of that, I think, especially when he wrote this intro. He describes Bachman as a rainy day sort of guy, if there ever was one. And he also just calls him not a very nice guy. And he cites the fact that a lot of his Bachman books have bad, like, you know, like tragic endings, as like, he basically said the happiest ending in the Bachman books is The Running Man, where, you know, a guy basically, spoiler alert for The Running Man, basically flies an airplane into a media conglomerate skyscraper which is, you know, essentially an act of heroism in that book to free people from sort of the mind control and everything. And that to him, he's like, that's the happiest ending. And it's like really twisted because, you know, I think Rage, we see sort of, you know, the futility of, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think, like, I know Rage like doesn't have a happy ending per se. But I guess the question is like, what is the story he's telling? Cause it's like, you know, it's a happy ending in the sense that the school shooter was thwarted. You know,
but I've said this, I think, before when we were just talking about regulators, but, I think one of the other differences, and again, this goes back to kind of the adolescence of Bachman, is that he's not trying to figure shit out.
Yeah.
You know, these books are sometimes thought experiments, you know, like he's like sort of in a way like, I wonder what would happen if this and this and this happened, right?
Yeah.
Like in The Regulators, it's really obvious. Like he's just kind of playing out an experiment. But in the other books, I think it's just, again, like he has this empathy and he's also working on something a lot of the time.
Yeah.
There's like some kind of like idea that he's trying to explore. And sometimes I think having read Dance Macabre, like I don't know if it's entirely conscious, right? Maybe because he's putting so much empathy into the characters, he winds up kind of working out some emotion or some kind of familial relationship or God or whatever.
Yeah.
In the Bachman books, there's no sense of like a deeper theme that's being kind of turned around and examined and
mm-hmm.
yeah
explored.
Like, he's just, he's mad at people. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, like.
It feels
yeah.
like Heath Ledger's Joker as we're talking about this, you know?
The
like,
Joker
I just
want to
see
again.
What's going to happen, right? And sometimes that turns out not so terribly, and sometimes it turns out, like, everything blows up, you know?
Yeah, so, like, Jen, you just reread The Long Walk, and I think most of us would agree that The Long Walk is definitely sort of the creme de la creme of mm-hmm. Bachman, because, you know, I mean, I think it does tap into the hyper-aggressive masculinity that exists in a mm-hmm. lot of Bachman, but in this case, almost for a good cause, because it's The Long Walk is probably best read as, you know, bonding amongst men and teenage boys mm-hmm. specifically in a very high-stakes situation, but, like, who are still going through... adolescence, teenage angst, sexuality, horniness, like all of those sorts of mm-hmm. things. So what do you think it is? Is
there's something being worked out, actually. I'd point
yeah.
out, I think the reason why Long Walk resonates and also endures, it's like the one book that I thought about rereading.
Yeah.
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the one I wanted to reread, yeah.
It has something going on inside it.
Mm-hmm.
It rewards a reread.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, basically, well, like, where the other books don't really.
I think part of that is because I don't think King is kind of raging at the characters in his story. I think he's raging at the world that mm-hmm. would put these characters in this system. And I was thinking about it, and I got really nerdy while I was preparing for this, and I twinned all of the books, all of the Bachman books, with another Stephen King book. And I just did it kind of on how I felt when I was reading those books. And I like looked up the years they were written and they all kind of lined up. But the one that I twinned this one with was The Body, yeah. because I think both mm-hmm. of them are about friendship. But the thing that's so dark about The Long Walk is that it's a zero sum friendship. It's like they all know that in order to survive, all of these friends they're making have to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I haven't finished it yet, but I'm to the point where Garrity is starting to realize like at some point he's going to want McVries to die
yeah.
because that means that he's not going to die. And I think that's like the anger I kind of feel in that book. But that's why it feels so much more like a King book, is because I feel like the characters generally like each other. He's not mad at them mm-hmm. per se. He's mad at
the system world, that you know? Basically forces like ruins a friendship, like a budding friendship,
right.
like the system has put it in a situation where the friendship can't flourish, like and it
right.
and it pits people against each other, like this world in general pits people against each other. So
it's like the challenge on MTV.
I love the challenge.
It's like road rules.
I was actually just thinking about that because someone asked me to write a review of like the Real World 20-year reunion anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I was thinking about is how innocent that first Real World is.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because we know what they rely on is the stakes in that show. Nothing. There's
yeah.
just people mm-hmm. just being friends or not being friends. There's no mm-hmm. like contest. There's no one getting voted out. There's no reward. It's just the idea of just watching people trying to get along was somehow enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no awareness today, of what it's going to look yeah. like at the end. Whereas I think everyone now is a little more camera ready.
Yes.
But yeah, someone I just binged the new, I don't watch a lot of reality TV, but I love The Challenge. I always think that's fun mm-hmm. to go back to. And when going to what you were saying about The Long Walk, it does feel like that too, where it's like you're kind of friends become foes. Everyone's kind of feeling each other out. And I think that's common in a lot of, you know, reality TV and stuff today. And I think The Long Walk really kind of captures that ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm. Well, Running Man too, because it's literally about...
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I pair The Running Man and The Long Walk together in my mind, but I'm yeah. really interested to hear what Jen paired with some of the other ones.
Well, ironically, I think in some ways, maybe it's because... The reason why those Bachman books don't feel like they're really wrestling with like an emotional problem or something like a knotty theoretical, you know, philosophical issue is that a lot of them are about capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of them are just like anger at capitalism. So there's a real irony about the using your pseudonym because you're so fucking successful. Like
<That's>
to write what are a lot of the time, you know. Even like Thinner, you could say, is about consumption, right?
Sure,
like,
yeah, absolutely.
And that's the theme of Bachman is mm-hmm. consumption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really interesting look at it. And it is funny, and maybe that is why he's pissed, because you know Bachman, who is a dairy farmer, who you know kind of lives off the land in the world of King, like gets outed as the richest, most successful author in the world. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit more. I'm going to read a little bit more from this essay where King talks more about sort of what Bachman meant to him personally. There's a place in most of us where the rain is pretty much constant. The shadows are always long, and the woods are full of monsters. It is good to have a voice in which the terrors of such a place can be articulated and its geography partially described, without denying the sunshine and clarity that fill so much of our ordinary lives. Bachman had become a kind of id for me. He said the things I couldn't, and the thought of him out there on his New Hampshire dairy farm, not a best-selling writer who gets his name in some stupid Forbes list of entertainers too rich for their own good, or his face on the Today Show or doing cameos in movies, quietly writing his books gave him permission to think in ways I could not think, and speak in ways I could not speak. And then these news stories came out saying Bachman is really king, and there was no one, not even me, to defend the dead man, or to point out the obvious, that King was also really Bachman, at least some of the time. And that actually speaks to what you were just saying, Anna, like the general idea where he's like, I can't say these things as the guy who's on the Today Show or whatever, which is interesting. But I don't know. I'm drawn to that idea of like writers having two different sides and wanting to have this outlet to write the really grim stuff, the stuff that maybe your regular readers don't want to read. And it made me think a little bit of, I've talked about him on the pod before, but the author Nick Cutter, who wrote The Troop, and that's a pen name for Craig Davidson, who is a writer who, if I'm being correct, I'm trying to think, like, I don't think his other books are, like, they're not as horrific and disgusting as books like The Troop and The Deep, which he wrote as Nick Cutter. And that just really made me think a lot about, like, I remember when I found out that Nick Cutter was a pen name, I was surprised because those books were really successful and you'd think he'd want them under his own name, but maybe he also doesn't want to be wholly associated with how grim and how dark and how disgusting those books are. And so, I don't know, like, do we think that, I don't know, how would you interpret what he defines as the key differences between his writing and Bachman's? Like, and what is it specifically about Bachman that, in basically, if we're reading through the lines here of what King's saying, what is it that would really alienate the King reader? What do you guys think?
I mean, I think it's weirdly self-aware, although not self-critical. And the idea of like having an anonymous side or a pseudonymous side, it actually got me thinking a little bit about recovery and anonymity in the rooms.
I was thinking the same thing.
And how it works. The reason for having anonymity in the rooms is almost the opposite, which is that you get to stop. At least for me, I'd be interested in what Jen has to say, but for me, in the rooms, I get to stop being the person I'm playing at being in the outside world, and have being someone with just, you know, a little bit of renown, like a, you know, the D, F list, you know, fame. The thing that's really like what I love about the anonymity of the rooms is feeling like I'm being judged just for judged. Actually, feeling like I'm just being known for what I share in that meeting. Like, and I'd say one thing, and I bet this happens to King even more, and I've always been curious about how real famous people deal with this. When someone comes up to me and like wants to talk about politics in an AA meeting, I get so pissed. Like, I'm like, that's not who I am. That's not who I am right now. Like, I don't want to do that. And I wonder if there's a little bit of that. Jen?
Well, and I also think, because I do agree, and I think there's a freedom in just being able to say what you want. And that's the biggest thing that I've gotten out of the rooms is, like, I can say whatever I want. And it really helped me start talking about a lot of things to have that, like, the stakes removed, you know? And I wonder if, like, as Randall, as you were reading the first part and he was talking about being so mad and feeling robbed, like, I feel like the way that he kind of gets out his anger and frustration on the page, especially starting this as a teenager, like, that's, and allowing himself to kind of get that out without being judged. That's why I drank a lot of times, like, because I could get those feelings out. And, like, really, like, I always had the excuse of, oh, I was drunk, I don't remember what I said, you know? And there's, like, a freedom in that. And, like, kind of looking at the timeline, the time that Bachman was exposed was kind of coincided with the time that King got sober, I think. And, I mean, I think there's a lot more personal information that we will never know about how that process went, and we don't need to know. But it's just interesting because I wonder if Bachman was a way of dealing with a lot of the things that King couldn't or couldn't figure out how to deal with, that go that getting sober and learning how to actually process that in a healthy way has helped him. Because when I read the books, like when I read The Regulators and when I read Blaze, even though I think he wrote it when he was younger, but he edited it when he was older.
Oh, okay.
As much as he did edit it. Yeah, I think it's a Tronc novel. But like there's a reflection there, I feel like, that is not present in the Bachman books. And it's not nearly as much as I think a King book, but I do feel like Anna, you said a self-awareness, but not critical. And I think I can feel that, you know,
I want to say one more thing on the rooms thing, which is that I think so I've almost talked myself into like being more sympathetic to Bachman, but I feel more sympathetic to Bachman than I do to the books. And I also feel like one thing that is why we have the anonymity tradition in the rooms is, you know, what you see here, what you hear here, let it stay here. And there's an argument for like, yes, you get that shit out, but you don't publish it.
You don't, right, like, yes.
You don't need to, like, when you process something in a therapy session, in a group session, in an AA meeting or 12-step meeting of any kind, there is also kind of awareness that maybe you don't do it elsewhere.
Yeah. These are the Finstas. Stephen King, if you guys are familiar with that term, but the fake Instagram that people use to hide from their parents.
Yeah. All my
kids stuff. I did not know that term.
Yeah, but again, it's you don't want to put it under your own name. Oh, go ahead, Randall.
I was just gonna say, like, my nieces, I got like invited to see the Finsta, but then I found out that the Finsta has essentially just become the normal Instagram. And so there's like five other Finstas, you know, that like I will Trinsta. Never see. Yeah. Which is so wild to me.
But I think it doesn't get the Stephen King approval, right? He these are ideas he has that he's not ready to put out under his own brand, but he kind of wants to throw them out there just to kind of, I don't know, test the waters. I think these are a lot more external looking than the other books, whereas Stephen King can be a little more internal and, you know, kind of processing the mind of a person who is losing their mind versus these where it's just like observing someone going crazy, lacking empathy, you know, raging against the machine, as it were.
Well, I think it seems like King can be persuaded to publish anything. like I think that he really is someone who, he writes prolifically and he publishes prolifically. And I think that probably there's, you know, a ton of writers probably look down on that. And they're like, I would only publish, you know, the best thing that I have written. Like only, like the one thing that I will show people is this, the one thing that I have labored over for years that I am so proud of. Whereas King's like, I wrote this thing in a week. Let's publish it. Why not? See what the response is. And that to me is,
and they can you imagine that there's like a Stephen King papers? I don't know if there would be, right? Like, because they're like,
they're
like
all
for
out.
Some, yeah. Like I was, you know, like I've been watching the Woody Allen Pharaoh thing, and like there's a thing about all his papers, like all the stuff he didn't put out because it's not good enough. And so there's a rich trove to like look at. And with Stephen King, it's going to be like, oh, there's like my grocery list. I didn't publish that. There's like, you know, note to self. I didn't publish
to do list. Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
but that's part of why I love the Bachman book so much. And I look at it, I think of it kind of like the White Album, you know, like because there are people that say you should edit half of that out and just make one single album. Mm-hmm. And I think it's almost like the exception that proves the rule kind of thing. Like there's so much material that you can really see the contrast there. Because I was watching those Woody Allen papers also. And I was like, oh, yeah, I see why you didn't put that out.
Well, the thing is, I think if we looked at, I mean, I think if Rage was never published ever, and then we saw it, you know, after King died or something, and it was in his papers, people would probably just be like, well, I can see why he never published that, you know?
Yeah.
And that's not to say, like, Rage is worthless. Like, there's definitely stuff in there that is really cool and interesting and says a lot about King, but, you know, but that's the thing is I think King has that reputation for being, you know, an inconsistent author in some ways because he publishes everything, you know, whereas a lot of authors are maybe a little bit more precious about what they put out into the world. Like, you know, King is the person who will publish Lycie's story, but then he'll also put out Cell, you know, and it's like, and that contrast is funny. And I think that's part of another thing why people love King so much, because he does
right.
That.
And King also circles back to themes over and over again, like Jen and I have been talking about, like we're on all the abusive relationship podcast. And I think maybe a more selective author would be like, well, what's my best examination of this theme?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? Whereas King is not afraid to be like, you know what? I'm still thinking about abusive relationships, and I'm just going to go back and write another novel about abusive relationships.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of, like, David Lynch, though, too, how he would agree to, you know, film, like, Dune or Return of the Jedi if he could then make his pet project. And I wonder how much of this was King going to the publishers and being like, you know, they're like, great, Steve, we want to publish this. And he's like, but I also want to do this. And they're kind of like, all right, they kind of come as a pair. Like, we're going to let you publish this one. And looking at some of the years, too, I was thinking back about, like, Bret Easton Ellis and how, you know, in the 90s, late 80s, some of his work was very controversial. And if they maybe were nervous and they're like, all right, don't, this is not a Stephen King book. Let's put this out, you know, as this third party and maybe kind of avoid taking on the criticism head on. I don't know. That's just speculation on my part. But yeah, it's like his little, I mean, I'm jealous. Like, I think it'd be great to have a pseudonym that I can kind of do whatever I wanted.
Well,
and
I think
still fall back on the mainstream success.
And I think I think the thing about King is he loves Bachman. Like, it's clear that he likes Bachman books more than I think anybody in the world likes Bachman books. And I think that's because he has it speaks to a part of him that he doesn't get to share with people a lot, I think. I'm going to read this one last part here. His voice sounded superficially the same as mine, but underneath there was a world of difference. All the difference between sunshine and rain, let us say. And his view of people was always different from mine. Simultaneously funnier and more cold-hearted. Bart Dawes in Roadwork, my favorite of the early Bachman books, is an excellent example. Bachman has been one way in which I have tried to refresh my craft and to keep from being too comfy and well padded. So that's sort of his explanation. But what I think is interesting is multiple times in this essay, he describes Bachman as funny. Do we think Bachman is funny? Because I don't at all. But what do you guys think? No. Yeah.
Teenager again.
Yeah.
What a teenager thinks is funny versus, you know, there's no sophistication to it. There's no, like, again, there's no empathy. Like, to me, the best comedy, ultimately, it's funny because you feel something.
Right.
You know? It doesn't have to be, like, sympathy either, but this is just, like, it's interesting.
No, I think it's funny in the way that I thought breaking bottles in parking lots was funny when I was a teen, you know? There's a release. You feel something, and that's what you're kind of chasing. It's not exactly sophisticated, you know.
Yeah,
I still laugh at bottles breaking. Don't get me wrong, but back then it was much more of a pastime, and now it's just a random like, back in the day, right when I was simpler.
Yeah, I almost wonder if it's perhaps because I think about The Running Man, right, and that is such a dour book, but I think what he finds funny about it is, you know, and I'll admit, like, I laughed, but not in a way where I thought it was funny, but in a way where it was just, like, so goofy. Like, at the end of The Running Man, when he's flying the plane into the building, like he describes that, what is it, Ben? I can't remember his name.
Ben,
he's, like, giving the finger, like, as he's flying the plane into the building. And it's so stupid. But, like, I mean, maybe that's, like, what he finds funny is sort of the fuck authority kind of thing. Like, or just the general sort of worlds he's creating. Like, he's created this world with this sort of, like, you know, bloodthirsty reality show. And maybe to him that's just really funny. But then I think a lot about, like, Long Walk. And Long Walk is, you know, it's got humor, I think, but it's still a pretty bummer of a novel. But what is funny in that? And of course the first thing I thought of was when the one guy, like, dry humps the girl and then gets a boner and then can't shake it and then gets killed, you know? And and I'm like, maybe that's what he thinks is funny. But that to me is just really sad. Like, it's just tragic.
Yeah, there's, like, a punching down humor that I think is, like, pervasive. And I actually found a quote in The Regulators about this kind of and Johnny is thinking, none of this is funny, but he laughs just the same, maybe to keep himself from screaming. He's afraid that if he starts doing that, he won't be able to stop, which I think is kind of like this gallows humor outlet kind of thing, which also, like, if going back to Heath Ledger's Joker, like, he's dressed as a clown, which is something that is supposed to be funny, but it's not funny because it's so dark, but you can kind of still kind of talk yourself into thinking it's funny. And I don't know. Also, for the record, I don't think Stephen King is particularly funny if he tries to be funny.
No. Like,
if you follow him on Twitter. And I love you, Stephen King, if you're listening.
Yeah, but we love him.
He's the
Pagliacci of authors.
He's just dad. It's all, like, dad humor.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just definitely of, and that also generation. Incredibly well-meaning white guy.
Yeah.
Just the most well-meaning white guy. And I know it... you know?
Yeah.
He's probably a great dad.
Yeah.
It's like reading James Caan's Twitter, which I know Randall reads, but he puts like end tweet at the end of every tweet. And you're like, I don't know if he fully gets how this comes across, but I'm sure it started as him being very like earnest about it and like straightforward. But
I think with regulators too, I think, you know, I can see the humor a little more there because there is something inherently funny about children's characters, like with alien heads and no faces, like just unloading on teenagers with shotguns. Like there is something really pitch black about that. Like, and so I can see the humor almost more so in the regulators than in anything else. And I guess Thinner is funny. And well, the thing is, I think he tries to mine a lot of humor from making fun of overweight people in that book. Uh-huh. But then he also, like, I think just the general idea of a Native American curse turning people into lizards and stuff is also probably darkly funny to him. But yeah, I don't know, it's just like, I think the packaging, because like when I look at it from, you know, the like the space view or whatever, I can see the humor in the regulators, but reading it, I don't think I laughed once at all, you know, because it's just nasty.
Yeah. I do now wonder like what Stephen King thinks is funny.
Yeah,
like Bosch. In general, not about his own work, but like what does he watch?
All in
like
the Family, I would bet. Yeah, but I think also the fact that the regulators, I mean, everyone knew that he was Bachman by this point. Mm-hmm. So going back and writing, you know what I mean? Like the cat was out of the bag, and Regulators feels very different from the other Bachman books. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the reason is this actually does feel more like a Stephen King novel than some of the other ones. It's less experimental.
Yeah.
Other than the whole twinning thing, I don't see a whole lot of, you know, new territory being unearthed.
Well, he talks about that a bit more later in the essay. Let's pivot over to that, where he talks specifically about the Desperation Regulators experiment. He says, "The idea was to take the characters from Desperation and put them into the Regulators. In some cases, I thought they could play the same people. In others, they would change. In neither case would they do the same things or react in the same ways, because the different stories would dictate different courses of action. It would be, I thought, like the members of a repertory company acting in two different plays. Then an even more exciting idea struck me. If I could use the rep company concept with the characters, I could use it with the plot itself as well. I could stack a good many of the Desperation elements in a brand new configuration and create a kind of mirror world. I knew even before setting out that plenty of critics would call this twinning a stunt, and they would not be wrong, exactly. But I thought it could be a good stunt, maybe even an illuminating stunt, one which showcased the muscularity and versatility of story, its all but limitless ability to adapt a few basic elements into endlessly pleasing variations, its prankish charm. But the two books couldn't sound exactly the same, and they couldn't mean the same any more than an Edward Albee play and one by William Inge can sound and mean the same, even if they are performed on successive nights by the same company of actors. How could I possibly create a different voice?" And so, obviously, he went with Bachman. Do we think that this is an illuminating stunt that showcased the muscularity and versatility of story? It's all but limitless abilities. He has such lofty ideals for this project, you right. know? And I think that maybe just comes from maybe self-justification and the idea that he maybe knows what he's doing is kind of gimmicky and he's trying to sort of justify it. I don't know, but I think I think Desperation, like I think we discussed, we think is a pretty powerful novel, one that I think most of us really enjoyed. And Regulators, most of us were like, well, this feels like, you know, I think a lot of us described it as purging, you know, like a diarrhea of sorts, to take the book's parlance. And yeah, wait, what'd you say, Dan?
I was going to say, I feel like the spirit of Desperation, like talk, sort of possessed the Regulators. And just we sort of watched it disintegrate and crumble and not match up to the original form.
Do we think overall, I think the answer is no, but like what about this experiment do we think just doesn't really, like, does it illuminate anything, I guess is a good question.
I think the experiment illuminates anything.
Okay.
I think the book The Regulators has some interesting ideas in it that are not fully explored.
Yeah.
That are just kind of gestured at. I think the idea that one of the things I was thinking about, like when Dan was talking, and also Jen, when you referenced the Joker, is the, you know, we use the phrase comic book violence. Mm. And one of the things, I think it's lost its irony in the way we use it, because what's interesting, the phrase should be, you know,
like a contradiction in terms, right? Comic book, funny, haha, and then violence. And I think he pushes that, right? He just pushes, like, literally, like, these are children's characters, but sort of like a comic book, right? Their genre. And he just pushes this idea to I wouldn't say logical extreme, you know, but to an extreme. And I think the stuff about TV and about how children's minds work, I want to sort of take the autism side out of it, because I, as we discussed before, I don't think he needed to make that child autistic.
Right.
But the experiment itself is, it's like, to me, feels kind of pointless. Like, he could have just written the regulators with entirely different, you know, characters, and I think it would have done, wouldn't made much of a difference.
Yeah, that was one thing for me, is the twinning was only by name, really. Like, I actually would have liked to have seen the characters from one book share a lot of qualities with the other ones and a lot of circumstances. But instead, it just was like, oh, yeah, that's the character from this one. They have the same name. And it didn't really go further than that for me.
Yeah, I think, Anna, you mentioned the one character that, like, we felt like we were getting an extension of Johnny Merrinville, like an alternate reality.
Yeah, he's like
reality.
The only one.
And then Kali, we also got, Kali was similar. And just, like, you see a little bit more of, like, who this person is when he's not possessed, perhaps, or, like, what would his career look like. But like you said, Dan, the majority of these people are just in name only, really, you know, twinners. So
it reminded me more of if you watched Blackadder, the Rowan Atkinson show, where it's four different periods of British history, and it's all the same actors, but they play different characters in every season. And that's, to me, this just felt like, other than, yeah, Johnny and Colin, like, there just wasn't a lot of, here's that same character in a different circumstance to me.
Yeah. Jen, what were you going to say?
I have a lot of thoughts about this, and I think I'm probably the lone defender of the experiment, because I love this. I love, just in general, the fact that he is so prolific and he is so willing to experiment with the form, because this is the same year that he put out The Green Mile also, which is just like, as a person who loves to analyze stuff, it's hugely successful for me because it gives me so much more material to look at. Now, if you're looking at successful as publishing three books that I love, I don't think he's successful there, because I don't really, like, I like talking about these books in connection with each other way more than I like either of them on their own. And I almost kind of look at The Regulators as like an addendum to Desperation. Like, I love it because it helps me to be cute. Like, The Regulators is cruel, but its cruelty refines Desperation, I think.
Yeah.
Like, it helps me kind of see what his thought process is, because, and there's a line in Desperation that I loved that says, in these silences, something may rise. And I love that because it's so open that it could be a great thing or it could be a threat, you know? And so I think when he, like, the silence is him, like, given this problem of working out his feelings about God and his powerlessness of his life. And we see two very different things rise out of it, which I really like. I like that. I think it refines the views on religion, because I think in Desperation, it is talk versus God. And I think in The Regulators, talk is God, and talk is his, like, myopic understanding of what God is. And I think we can see that kind of with the Hobarts, who are in The Regulators. And I think there's, like, I think that is his rage against what he understands religion to be. And I talked about that a little bit in The Regulators episode, but I pulled two quotes that kind of twinned a little bit. In the journal, they're talking about Hugh Hobart is the son, and he said, and Audrey is writing, I could see the other one, though, I swear I could, hiding behind Seth's eyes and laughing at me. I think the most terrible thing of all is how the stalky little boy knows to leave Hugh Hobart alone, to let him just watch. And comparing that to the quote in Desperation, sometimes he makes us live, talking about God, like seeing all of this tragedy unfold. And I think, I think this is just him refining how he feels and kind of getting the anger out, and, like, looking at television versus religion, like, how much of his understanding of religion is reading the script or saying the right words, going with the flow, like, standing up at the right time and sitting down at the right time. And I think this is him really processing that. So that's I found a couple of more examples of twinning, but I feel like I've been talking for a while. So.
No, I love what you're saying. I think that's a really, really smart read on it. And I'm curious, though, does having the same characters in Regulation in Regulators as Desperation, does that enhance? Because you're talking the thematic sort of dovetailing that's happening. And that's really interesting. But does the experiment with the characters, like, does that speak in the same way?
I think the only one it does is with Johnny.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Which is interesting because Desperation, I feel like he does not like Johnny. Like, he's very critical of Johnny. But then in The Regulators, he's way more sympathetic to him. And it stands out because I feel like he doesn't like anybody else. You know?
It's like a gentler, kinder Johnny in Regulators. But yeah, I guess I'm curious. So I think that's super interesting, like, because clearly you were able to learn more about Desperation via The Regulators. And I do think that that is probably super true in that he was allowing the themes of Desperation to sort of filter through perhaps his darker, more cynical side, which is Bachman in Regulators, which I think is a really smart way to look at it. Are there any other twinning aspects that we thought were compelling, that we thought were interesting? Like, because some of them I find so interesting, because I mentioned that, I think when we were doing the Desperation episode, I mentioned that I was really struck in a weird way, and I remembered it from when I read it from the first time, was the description of the panther paws, or is it a jaguar? Like, the big cat's paws, like, digging into Steve's shoulders and the claws digging in, and the description of blood blossoms coming out. And that was, to me, something that stuck with me for a really long time. And then I realized reading Regulators, he brings that scene back, like, the same moment happens. And... Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then even the thing is, like, on him, like, whatever big cat it is, like, is on Steve, and it's the same moment where it's digging his claws into him. And and that, to me, is, like, why that moment, you know? Like, what is it? Was that just something that was stuck in his head, too? Like, I just wonder about those things when I was reading Regulators. Like, there's certain images that perhaps he was really pleased with and felt the need to, like, carry them over. Did any of that work for you guys, or just other? I mean, it doesn't even matter if it worked necessarily, because I know that image for me stuck with me for years. And I mean, if it did that, then it's obviously, I think, probably a good thing, because it's an image that horrified me and stuck with me over time. And but is there any other twinning moments for you guys that perhaps you found at least interesting, compelling, or illuminating?
I found one, and it's, well, two, because I found it in both books, hence twinning. And it's two that we brought up in the Desperation and Regulators episode. And there's the scene where Ellen is being driven to the pit, and she's kind of contemplating what her life is. And so on page 188, it wasn't so much a question of where she was, she realized, as who she was. She couldn't believe she was the same Ellen Carver who was on the PTA and had been considering a run for school board this fall. And then contrasting that with the one we talked about, and I think it's also telling that I can't remember who says this in the Regulators, but it's talking about he had just gotten home from work, and it says, "None of it makes much of an impression on him. He is thinking about how he just got home from work. That seems like a very big deal to him for some reason. He thinks he will begin every account of this terrible afternoon. It has not yet occurred to him that he may not survive the terrible afternoon by saying, 'I just got home from work.' This phrase already has become a kind of magical structure inside his head, a bridge back to the sane and orderly world which he assumed only an hour ago, which was by right and would be for years and decades to come. 'I just got home from work.'" And I think it's... in Desperation, he is really willing to go into Ellen's head and think through all of this. And in Regulators, he is putting a facade on it and saying, "Nope, my phrase is, 'I just got home from work,' you know?"
Yep.
And I think it's really fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that a lot. What do you got, Anna?
I mean, I think that what I hear when Jen talks about that particular twinning is Bachman doing something that King does really well, which is this ordinary person in extraordinary circumstance. And I think in that, like, just got home from work sort of soliloquy, that's a very Kingian moment to me. It doesn't feel Bachman. It feels like he's caring about that character.
Yeah.
You know? And in the same, it is very similar. There's also another moment that I really liked in Desperation, where it's the It's the same moment where they get arrested by Kali and like Kali Atreides, and there's this thing of like, how can this be happening to me? The Peter character in that, like he has a, like, I just published, you know, whatever in a scholarly journal.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually it's funny because when the professor and regulators gets taken by Tak, I feel like there's not very much sympathy for it. It's much more making fun of that guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, go ahead, Dan.
Oh, I was saying one of the lines of dialogue that I found that twinned. So in the regulators, it says, after almost 15 years, when their only communication had been through lawyers, Johnny and the former Teresa Maraville had commenced a cautious dialogue, sometimes by letter, mostly on the phone, which is in the regulators. And then in desperation, it's after 5 years, during which their only communication had been through lawyers, they had begun a cautious dialogue, sometimes by letter, more often by telephone.
Huh.
And the fact that it's just a literal line to me stood out as one of the biggest twinnings. It just shows how there really is such a loose connection between these two books, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just like, I wish that, I just remember thinking when I was a kid and I was more interested in viscera and perhaps aesthetics than I was in message. I just remember, like, it's almost like reference culture, like the general idea that, that all you need to do to like enrapture an audience is just show them something they've seen before, right? And and like, you know, I think there's a lot of culture that just does that. It's like, here's some references, here's some things to get excited about that you guys are already familiar with. And I guess like I as a kid who loved King, and I think that's also part, we've talked about this in the pod, like it is fun, like when somebody from Salem's Lot pops up in a book way later, we love that aspect about King. But I think my problem with, I remember loving the twinning aspects in Desperation and Regulars, because I was like, there, it's like that Leonardo DiCaprio meme where he's pointing at the TV. It's like, there it is. And I loved that when I was young, but when I got older, I just wasn't seeing what the point was and what the connection was and why it was there. And it's one of those things where it's neat. Like it like lights up a bulb in my head and it's cool. Like, you know, like you, I'm sure you had the same moment, Dan, like, hey, that's the same line that was in this book and it's here. But the question is why? Why?
Yeah.
And so I think what you were saying, Jen, is super interesting because it's like, you're finding these thematic things that are filtered through King and through Bachman. And I think that's super interesting and super smart, but I just wish that the worlds themselves dovetailed cleaner, you know? Like, he tries to turn the suburban street into desperation at one point. Like, that's what the world is turning into. And he says, like, oh, outside the window, it is desperation in this year or whatever. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I remember just being like, why, you know, like, and we're not engaging with it beyond that surface level. Like, if the mythology or the lore, or if I felt like I was dealing with the same tack that I was dealing with in Desperation, because I think there are different ones. And I think thematically that works, but narratively that's where I struggle a little bit, because I'm just like, these are two different tacks, and I feel like I'm operating with two different sources of evil. And for that reason, I don't understand how the twinning necessarily manifests here. I don't know. Go ahead, Anna.
Well, like the way that he literally connects the books, right, is that you're supposed to believe that it's Tak who first goes into an eagle and then goes into the kid and gets transferred to Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And
like you do.
Yeah. And that feels weird to me. I don't know. There's something kind of strange about really wanting to make that connection.
Mm-hmm.
And then not doing a whole lot with it.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. For me, it's and I'm curious to hear what you guys think, too. Like, which version of Tak was scarier? Because I feel like in Desperation, Tak is a lot more menacing and sophisticated, kind of like a god or something. But I feel like in The Regulators, he was a little more fleshed out, but immature, more impulsive.
Mm-hmm.
Not as scary
like a teenager.
To me. Yeah, it wasn't as scary to me. And I was wondering if that was by virtue of who he was possessing, or what did you guys think?
Well, I think, I mean, we talked about this when we did the Desperation episode, which is that the big bad in Desperation isn't Tak, it's chaos.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very Kingian idea, right? The idea, and I think, Jen, you pointed this out then, in a lot of King books, there's a implication that there's a hierarchy of evil, and we're just seeing kind of one manifestation of it, and it's not the boss. Mm-hmm. There is somewhere, perhaps, the
the biggest bad, the biggest evil. But I don't think King ever opens the door on that. Mm-hmm. And I think of that, I think of Dance Macabre and how he talks about, maybe, well, actually, I think he's quoting Hitchcock about, you keep the door closed, yeah, to keep, mm-hmm, the monster scary. And I think chaos is a lot scarier than any monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And and nothingness. And also that's the other thing that's the big bad and desperation, is the idea that there is no God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think when I think about twinning and which talk is scarier, like, I think which one of these books could exist successfully on their own. And I think desperation, while desperation is a really challenging book for me, I think it is completely like self-sufficient. And I think The Regulators just feels juvenile on its own. Mm-hmm. And what I think I find really interesting is its connection to desperation. And I think that's the same with Talk. It's like, and I was thinking about like, which one should I read first? And I read The Regulators first, like years before I read Desperation. And now I think like, I wouldn't recommend anybody read Regulators first, because it puts it in context. And so if this book exists really to put Desperation in context, as an analyzer of King, I love it. As a constant reader, maybe not so much. Right. And I'm probably not going to reread.
That's an interesting point. So I read Desperation first, but which one did everyone else read first?
Desperation.
I read Desperation.
So you're the standalone Jen with The Regulators. She stands alone. No, because I was going on Reddit and people, you know, they're like, which one should I read first? And
right,
it really doesn't matter. I guess I would say Desperation. Just, you'll be able to plow through The Regulators. Whereas I feel like starting with The Regulators, it might dissuade you from immediately
life
jumping
is
into
short.
Desperation.
Get Desperation in first. Exactly. You don't want to be hit by a bus having only read The Regulators.
This from four people who have read like 60 Stephen King books. But I
right, yeah.
A question as we wind down here, do we miss Bachman? Do we want him to come back? Because I do think that King's probably got, you know, another trunk novel somewhere, or maybe he'll want to revisit it before, you know, before he retires, quote unquote. And, I don't know, because we got Blaze, but I've never read Blaze and I've not really heard much discourse around Blaze. So I get the vibe it's not necessarily like top tier King. Jen, you've read it, right?
I have, yeah. It's good. It's just slight. Yeah. It feels like, okay.
That's exactly how I would describe Blaze pizza. That's amazing.
I think I would say that I wouldn't mind Bachman reappearing, but I'd want him edited, but that's Stephen King.
Yeah. I just do wonder if he's capable still, because I think that he's gotten, you know, and I don't say this in a bad way in any way, shape, or form, but I think he's gotten a bit softer as he's gotten older in terms of, I think his fangs aren't as sharp as they used to be. And his books are more optimistic now in general. And I think his view of humanity is more optimistic now than it used to be. And I do wonder if he would have that in him, if that teenage spirit, that sort of, I don't know, that grimness is still there. It's to me, I'd love to see a Bachman book in, you know, in the 2020s, just to know like what that sounds like now from him.
I would love the Midwest standoff we just have, where it's like, no, you go. That's Laura came up with that term, but
yeah.
the way Night Shift, like I would love to see a short story collection from Bachman.
Mm.
And I would not be surprised if one does come out in the next decade or two of just, here's these sort of little experimental one-offs that have some sort of terror in them, not fully fleshed out ideas, but taken as kind of a compendium would be interesting to read back to back to back. I don't think I could do another Regulators, but I would love to see some 50-page, 100-page short stories.
Well, do you guys remember that? I believe it's in Skeleton Crew, the Milkman stories. There's like two Milkman stories, and they're really weird. And like, I think I remember reading that they were like, you know, they were cast off from some novel idea that he had, but it was basically like a killer milkman just like killing everybody on his route, and it's like really gross. And I remember we just hated it when we talked about it on the episode, but it's like so mean-spirited and nasty and cynical, and it totally strikes me like, just, I never really thought of it that way, Flieger, like the idea of Bachman short stories. But I bet like revisiting Skeleton Crew and Nightmares and Dreamscapes, if you filter that lens a little bit, I bet you could probably classify a few of those as Bachman's, or even the one from Night Shift with the school shooter, you know? Or yeah. Kane Rose Up.
Kane Rose Up, I think, is in Skeleton.
Oh, that's
Crew.
Skeleton Crew. Yeah, I think maybe yeah. I think there was maybe some Bachman, more Bachman in Skeleton Crew than we realize. So
well, and is there enough Bachman at that point to sustain an entire collection of short stories? And was he really differentiating? Because for Psychoanalysis, we just watched Children of the Corn, and I reread that story, mm-hmm. and that story felt really like a Bachman story. You mm-hmm. know, like the characters are so mean to each other, and like it really ends on a really down, hopeless note.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he had the leeway to call himself Bachman for that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, what's up, Anna?
I didn't interrupt the chat because like my dog was in the strangest position. We'll have, across the room and there's just legs.
We'll have to post that to our socials.
right. I think in general, Bachman has outlived its usefulness for
yeah.
King.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be interested. Existed for a reason. You know?
I'd be interested to see how King feels about that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're probably going to see another Bachman book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because King, again, we love him. Everything critical said about him is said with love.
Yes.
But he is so fucking self-indulgent. Like, he just is. And he has no reason not to be.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's really interesting. I'm going to bring A one more time. I think he probably does have a program, as they say, in that I've heard that he actually goes to meetings. And he also, again, reading Dr. Sleep, his depiction of sponsorship is a pretty hardcore description. Like,
yeah.
It's a form of sponsorship that, you know, a lot of us don't really do. And I wonder if that's the thing that keeps him kind of reined in a little bit.
Mm.
Because mm-hmm. when you think about his status, like, again, he has no reason to not just publish every little thing and to just be like some kind of like, I don't know, just be an asshole, basically.
Yeah.
And he isn't. I don't think he's not. But he does publish anything. He does really publish anything.
Well, and I think like if you look at like Later and Finders Keepers and Chuck's Dream, I think you can see him processing through what's going to happen when he dies. And he's probably got some trunk novels that haven't been released, or he's got stories in his head that he can't get out yet. Like there's elements of that. What's going to happen to my stories when I die? And I think that's part of why I love him as a writer, is I feel like he just wants to tell us stories. Like he's not really trying to write the great American novel. He's not trying to like be someone most of the time. He just wants to tell us stories, and I think you can see him kind of wrestling with that. So I definitely think we're going to get Blaze. And I wonder if he has some kind of agreement or some kind of document saying what can and cannot be released, you know, which when I was reading Later,
I was like, I think there's going to be nothing.
I think he's got everything.
I think he's just going to like,
I can't imagine him putting limits on, especially after he goes. I was saying like shopping lists are going to come out to do this.
And I will read every single one of them.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
We'll talk about it on the pod.
Like when a musician releases like a 2-disc B-sides album and you're kind of like, oh, do I really need 38 songs? But if you're a huge fan,
yeah,
that's part of the discography for you. And I feel that way. And, you know, I think it's interesting that he chose to kill off Richard Bachman. And I think that sort of speaks to what he feels about this alter ego, that maybe he's outgrown its usefulness. Mm-hmm. But again, that doesn't mean that, you know, it's like when any artist is like, oh, I'm retiring. And you're like, well, there's nothing stopping you. You're not held to this. So just because Richard Bachman's dead doesn't mean they're not going to like unearth, you know, a trove of papers that have just been found in Maine or, you know, something like that.
Jen, why don't you take us out by sharing with us your twinning, all your twinners of the Bachman novels?
Okay, so just for the record, before any listeners, well, actually me, this is thematic twinning, I think, not necessarily like stories or not really characters. Like I didn't concern myself with what characters pop up in what stories, because I feel like that's more King's Dominion kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And also, I was thinking about this through the context of Stephen King being a writer who cares about all of his characters and Richard Bachman being a character who is really focused on one character in the story.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Rage, I paired with Apt Pupil. Because I think those are both like two, like a teenage boy like dealing with his anger and his fascination with death. And Rage was in 77 and Apt Pupil was in 82. Although that's part of different seasons. So, it's, you know, we just don't know when he wrote things. Right. You know? Okay. And I already said that I paired The Long Walk with The Body. And I kind of went into that a little bit. Okay.
Well, so see, that's interesting because do you think Apt Pupil could be a Bachman book? Like, I get Bachman
vibes. Because I think it interrogates Todd. Like, I think it looks at the ways that Todd is, like, how destructive this is, where I don't think Rage really interrogates
He's
that.
Much more critical of Todd than Charlie. Yeah. No, right, that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, but I was just going to say, like, but then you have, like, Long Walk, and then The Body, which to me is almost, like, pure, undistilled King. Like, everything we love about King in a lot of ways is The Body. Like, the warmth of it, the nostalgia, the wistfulness, but also the terror and the horror. Anyways, continue.
Okay, so, just go with me on this one. So, I put Roadwork with Pet Sematary.
Okay.
Because I think
they involve digging.
They do involve digging, yes.
Real estate, yeah.
And real estate, yeah. But it's also like this man like really trying to hold on to his idea of what his family is. Hmm. And I think this is where I see the divergence a lot if I really go with this twinning thing, which, you know, might be a little bit of a stretch. But like I feel like Lewis really wants to hold his family together because he loves them. And I think Barton Dawes is so self-absorbed and stubborn that it's really just wanting to hold on to the status.
Yeah.
Rather than like the humanity of being a part of a family that I see with Lewis. So
yeah, that's interesting.
These are great, Jen. I'm loving these. These are awesome.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, I think that you're right on the nose in terms of the themes being explored. I don't know if they're related in King's head.
Yeah, I was going to say it was like conscious. Yeah.
And I don't think they were probably, and I think the idea that they're written about the same time, maybe not either. But the thematic stuff, I think, is really, I think that thematically you're right on. And these are also some themes that are just King themes, right? Mm-hmm. Like family's huge in King novels in general. And I think, in childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know. Well, and talking about the themes and how seeing him explore over the years and like not want, like being okay with just putting a pin in it for now and okay, I'll go back to death and revival like 20 years later. Like, I love seeing him kind of explore these things. And yeah, I don't think a lot of this is intentional.
Yeah.
I think these are things that live inside him. You know?
But even like the taking of land, right, from the Native Americans versus road work.
Yeah, that's just a really clever one. I never would have made that. But then there's so many parallels.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. Sometimes eminent domain is better. That was so lame.
That was the tagline.
That's so funny.
Okay, what do you got for Running Man?
Okay, I paired Running Man with Firestarter.
Okay.
Because I think, they're both running from things. But I also think it is a man trying to save his family. But Firestarter is so much more concerned with Charlie and his relationship with Charlie and, like, the connection between the two. And, like, I don't even remember what Ben's... I barely remember Ben's name. I don't remember his family's name. And I think they're only mentioned. So I think that's kind of the myopic story of the same theme. Again, don't think that he intended this at all.
Yeah.
But this is the twins that I find.
I think you just put you hit the nail on the head with like as far as like what the difference is, which is like it's the myopic version of the theme versus like the fleshed out version of the theme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, in Bachman books it's pretty myopic. And we talked about it again. It's like moving chess pieces around on a board and kind of seeing or just like, you know, I wonder what it's the thought experiment stuff. Mm-hmm. And again, he doesn't hate the characters, but he's using them.
Mm-hmm.
And more than he's trying to figure them out.
Yeah. And he's giving himself permission to not have to figure them out, I think. Yeah. They're like his chess pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So for Thinner,
mm-hmm.
I have Christine. Because I think he wanted to be thinner, Arnie wanted to be cooler. Like, it's this idea of wanting to be something you're not and having that need and desire consume you, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, like, the way Thinner ends is so, like, he fucks over his family, you know? And I think Christine is so much more concerned with Dennis and how this affects everyone else. Like, it's not Arnie focused, you know?
It's also the people getting hit by cars.
This is the biggest stretch.
That's true.
I would say, Jen, I love you. I think that you're on the right track. This is the biggest stretch for me.
This one was a little bit of a stretch, but I also think
I thought you were
going to
be like, there's red. There's both.
Right.
The evil thing is
but
red.
But look at the covers. Yeah, but I also think this is when he was kind of moving out of, like, Thinner, I think, is different than the Bachman books.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, this is not the close. Like, there's no, one, it's supernatural, which I think most of the Bachman books are not, but, mm-hmm. you know.
I think that's one reason I like them less, by the way. I mean, yeah. I've also really been a little bit, you know, not disappointed because, again, we love King, but like his decision to kind of go non-supernatural in his later years, like, I mean, come
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
Give
I want
us,
those
give
monsters.
Us some horror. Horror. Monsters.
Might we recommend later his new book?
Yes.
I think you would actually
oh,
like
it. Oh, it has that?
Oh, yeah.
I actually just, it's on my shelf.
You should read it. It's good.
It is good.
Yeah. Like, I know, because, you know, like, even the Institute, I was kind of like, mm-hmm. you know, like.
I'm with you on that.
I get it. There is a supernatural element involved, but it's really about kids.
Yep. Yes. 100%. Later yeah. is very much about, I think, like, the supernatural element is so important to that book. And I,
it is.
In a way that I think was really satisfying. So I think you'll
All
dig
right,
that.
I'm on it.
What do you got? Was Blaze next?
Blaze is next. Yeah. Although I just want to note, I think that there was the Misery was intended to be a Richard Bachman book, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
it was,
yeah. found out, right? Although that feels very King to me.
Yeah, you know? Very mm-hmm. much so.
Like, that's one of my all-time favorites. Okay, so I put Blaze. And if you thought the last one was a stretch, buckle up. I paired Blaze with 11-22-63.
Okay.
And the reason why is because Blaze, I know, is a trunk novel, 11-22-63, was an idea that he had a long time ago and had been formatting it. There's all, or like formulating it in his mind. There's also a big Of Mice and Men connection in both of those books.
Okay.
Because Blaze is really kind of King's interpretation of Mice and Men, and that is in 11-22-63. And I think both of those stories are about trying to control your destiny mm-hmm. and trying to like exert some kind of control over the universe. And I think Blaze is a way smaller, meaner, sadder version of that.
Mm-hmm.
But they both end in the same place, but it just feels so completely different. So
yeah,
yes.
It reminds me of like Lenny with the Rabbit too, with 11 or not 11-22, but I guess Under the Dome. Never mind. With the aliens controlling people, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. kind of as a place.
Yeah.
There, but
if I were your professor,
A plus.
I would give you an A, but I'd be like, kind of a stretch, but I admire the way you did it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not, again, this is like, I think it's appropriate to look for these connections, mm-hmm. and I think they are there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that sometimes what we're picking up on when we see these connections are just the things that Stephen King is obsessed with in general.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're saying, family, childhood, chaos,
mm-hmm.
Chaos versus order,
real estate,
and
real estate,
and fat people,
yeah.
Yep. Well, and you compare Pet Sematary with Revival, but those are both very King books, you know, and King processes. I think the difference is just the different times in his life, mm-hmm. you know. But
it's definitely like a temporal reflection too. It's just like, what is the artist obsessed with during this period of time? Uh-huh. And I think that list is great, Jen. I would give you A+.
Yeah.
A+.
I said I'd give her an A. A+.
That's
plus.
Right. That's,
I give you five bright red Pennywise clown noses.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and like when we were talking about would they stand on its own, like I think if he had intentionally tried to pair these books, it would have made them lesser books.
Yeah.
Too. You know.
Oh,
like,
totally.
You know.
No, that's a fun experiment. Lots there. So good discussion. I think this was fun. It was fun to revisit Bachman. All these years later after we did our Bachman books episodes and we're going to revisit Bachman one more time with Blaze and maybe again in the future, depending on where things go. So it's a fun topic to discuss and a fun sort of detour with this pod about Mr. King. While our literary journey is over with these books, we have one more episode where we're going to talk about Desperation, the TV miniseries. We'll probably mix things up, get a few new voices in here, talk about Ron Perlman's breakout role as Colly Intriguan.
Oh, wow.
Oh, you don't, you didn't know
I didn't
he started
know that,
it?
No.
It's also it's also got Steven Weber. So, yeah, he plays Steve.
Oh, sign me up.
I'm a little hurt. That's okay.
Well, it's not something I would want to subject everyone to. It is very long. So, and it was on, what, TNT? I can't remember. ABC, maybe? Let's just say that. Let's just say that there's probably no bodies rotting from the inside in the way that they are in the
look,
book.
I watched the Stand miniseries, even though I didn't have to. So, and well, I just kept pretending I was involved in the pod discussions. Like,
there was a lot of
what I'll do this time.
There was a lot of bloodletting on that. But yeah, this was fun. Thanks so much for joining us on this journey. Our next book episode is going to be Wizard and Glass. We might do a fun Danse Macabre book episode in between that. We're not sure yet. Still mapping it out. And if you are a patron, you can listen to our review of Stephen King's Later, his newest book, which we were just recommending a few minutes ago. And yeah, that one is available to our patrons. We will unlock it eventually for everybody. But yeah, lots to discuss there. We went longer on that one than I thought we would. Jen, what do you got?
Will we unlock it later?
There it is.
I'm sorry. That book unlocks all of my dumb dad humor, so I just apologize.
Jen, what is psychoanalysis up to these days?
So we are finishing up March, which was our examination of schizophrenia, and we are about to start a new theme on narcissism, which I cannot wait to talk about, and we're going to start that with American Psycho. So that is coming up. We just dropped an episode on Children of the Corn, which is a comfort horror episode. And we're going to be looking at 2017's It in a comfort horror episode also. So all of that's coming up. And Anna is going to do a comfort horror episode.
Hell
yeah. I think that we've decided that it's going to be on Alien.
Yeah.
Right?
Since I literally want to watch it again, even having just watched it.
It's so good.
I think it's the appropriate thing to do, and it's probably one of the only horror movies that I own. Like I have like a copy of the in these days. Isn't that a
which format?
Right.
DVD.
Nice.
Even though I don't have a DVD player.
That's devotion, you know.
Anna, what's going on in your podcast land these days?
Well, my, you know, full-time, you know, my day job of being a political podcaster, we're exploring themes of reconciliation and forgiveness right now, including reconciliation with the planet, which I just did an interview with Elizabeth Colbert, who's a staff writer at The New Yorker.
Cool.
Who covers climate. Her latest book, Under a White Sky, is really, really good. Very depressing. Just, you know, just telling you. It's about man's attempts to undo climate change.
Okay.
And I asked her, why isn't this book called What Could Go Wrong? Because there's some really risky things that people are trying to do. And then the podcast that people listening to this show might be more interested in, my science fiction and politics podcast, Space the Nation. We just did Alien. Mm-hmm. Although it'd be a very different discussion, because that discussion is a lot about class, which is one of, you know, anyone who remembers it, that's like a big theme in Alien. We did a cannon fodder episode on Ender's Game. Is it cannon or is it fodder? And I came down on the fodder side on that one. And we're actually about to tape one on Galaxy Quest.
Very cool. I love that movie.
Yeah. So that will hopefully be a fun episode.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm on the internets. I write sometimes.
Cool. Fleeger, where can we find you?
You're not going to ask me about my upcoming projects?
Well,
where can we find you? I don't know. Yeah. Take a nap.
You can find me on our episode.
I forgot to say, Jen and I are talking about having her come on the science fiction podcast to talk about, I think, T2?
Terminator 2! Yes, I will talk about that till the end of time. So.
It's so good.
Right. Which we were going to kind of do an intro. We're going to pull from her podcast theme idea and do something on trauma.
Nice. So. Fleeger, where can we find you?
Dan Fleeger online, most social media. Find my Finsta if you can. For it's photos hidden. I don't want my parents to see.
It's hidden like Army Hammers.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for that comparison. Yeah.
As for me, you can find me at Randall Colburn and various places on the internet writing. Also, Losers Club podcast. Become a patron if you haven't yet. We've got lots of fun stuff in the Barrens, where we call it. So you can find us at patreon.com/thebarrens. We'd love to have you there. In the meantime, this has been fun, everyone. Let's wish everyone some long days.
Long days.
And pleasant nights. Thanks, everyone.
I got some hot friends. Got some hot friends. I got some hot friends. I got some hot friends. But you know you want somebody to treat you good.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.
Every town has its dark history. Hometown Ghost Stories is a paranormal podcast that goes town to town all across the globe, exploring the world's most haunted places, tapping into the dusty archives and the darkest corners to bring you the most terrifying stories of real people and their harrowing experiences. Hometown Ghost Stories dives into the history of haunted locations and investigates why and how these places earned their terrifying reputation. Rob, Dave, and Jesse go live every Tuesday night after an uninterrupted documentary-style breakdown on the case, followed by an open discussion with live viewers. Subscribe today to listen to Hometown Ghost Stories on your preferred podcast platform, or watch the video version on YouTube and now Spotify. Head on over to the Bloody FM Podcast Network and check out Hometown Ghost Stories, if you're brave enough.